Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of an explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. Everything is there available free. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet process. If you choose to listen to them, they can serve as a tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefit out of this tool in a short period of time. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, as it frequently leads to a better quality of life for everyone who engages in the use of those tools. And it tends to promote comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. So that if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, if you press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. Alternatively, if you're not available to be with us live or don't want to call live, you can send an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeanie at whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And when we get your comments, questions, answers, or testimonials, we will do our best to address them during the show, and then, as time allows, send you a link, an email letting you know what day and time we were able to address that email, comment, question, etc. And then you can go back in the archives and listen. So that's the overview. That's why we're here, and we are always anxious and welcoming any comments, any questions, any feedback about how this work is sitting with you and or for you, and what we might do to make it more relevant. We have been working through the Way of Mastery since January 10th of this year, going, what some would say, painstakingly slowly, and offering to people the idea that this is a set of tools, and trying to help anybody who's so inclined to step into the use of those tools, actively using the tools in their life, understanding how the system might function as a set of tools and what it would take for you to start practicing with them in a way that is enlightening, that is results-oriented. We began the review of Lesson 23 and 24 a couple days ago. Lesson 23 said, you know, you might want to slow down and go back and go through. Now, these books were given as three separate books, so it was referring to the first, to the most recent 12 lessons, but I'm reading it out of, I was introduced to it as the Way of Mastery, which has all three books combined into one. And when it said, you might want to go back and reread, I went back to lesson one and started looking and digging for little gems and little things I might have missed. But the theme with this work from the very beginning is the theme of choosing. You have the power of choice. And yesterday when I was stopping the reading, I was reading under the heading, Choosing to Be the Capital T Truth. So again, we're struck with the theme of this work is that you are choosing your interpretation of life. And as you choose the focus for your conscious energy in each moment, your mind energy, that is how you create your experience of life. So we're encouraged over and over again to choose wisely. And what we were leaving off yesterday was that in this section of the lesson titled Choosing to Be the Truth, we have an invitation as we come to the close of the Way of Transformation to truly set aside time to withdraw yourself from the roar and the din of the world and to withdraw yourself from all the beliefs you have held about yourself or anyone. And there, in the silence of your own heart, now again, there's a key word here, silence. And I want to remind us that based on the definitions that we've heard over the past umpteen lessons, the word silence here is not referring to a state in which you cannot hear anything audible. The word silence here refers to a state of awareness in your mind where you clearly see that every perception and every belief you hold for someone is at very best a wild guess based on a tiny fraction of information. It may not be completely wrong, but it is certainly not the capital T truth. So the silence of your own heart means in the space within your own heart where you've recognized you don't truly know anything. So you're living in that questioning state within your own heart. And then from that space, releasing all attachment, withdrawing any identification from any beliefs you've held about yourself or anyone else, from that state, simply acknowledge that the capital T truth of life as a flow and you being a part of it, inseparable, constantly connected to your creator, is true always. And that the time is at hand right now for you to choose the power of the mind that's been given to you by your creator in the only sane way to use that power of mind. And that is to acknowledge, I and my creator are one. I and my creative source are one and the same thing. And then the text goes on and asks, why is this important? It says, in the end, all technique, all methodologies and strategies are really magical means for taking away the egoic part of the mind's insistence upon it being the authority, that it creates illusions to seduce and trick the mind to bring it to a place where it must come in order to truly step forward in and as life itself. So all strategies and all methodologies, even the exercises given to you in this book, in these lessons, are given to you because the mind has been held sway by illusion. The art of lessening the value that the mind places on illusion is the only thing that can truly be taught. All teaching is designed to return the mind to the brink of the kingdom of heaven. There and there alone, the mind itself, that which you essentially are, awareness itself, must from the depth of its beingness, without attachment to anyone or anything, it must declare its decision to be awake and therefore assume the mantle of responsibility for bringing forth into this world only the light of capital T truth in each moment. With every breath, with every gesture, with every intention, with every vision, with every thought, and with every choice. Indeed, beloved friends, the way of transformation brings you to the brink of the way of certain knowledge, absolute knowledge, unshakable knowledge. This is a journey without distance to a goal that has never changed. It is merely a change of mind. It is the decision to value the truth, the capital T truth, and to value the truth alone. When that decision has been fully embraced, you might think of it as a full embrace that embodies every cell of your being and the totality of all that you are. When that decision has been fully embraced, it becomes perfectly devoted to your union with all of creation. Perfectly devoted to the recognition that as the created, and you are created, it is time to surrender resistance to truth and to accept the love of all of creation, and that it has been given to you fully without measure and without condition, and that you've been created to live from that love so that that love might inform every thought and every deed, and that that love might pour forth through you as the very source of your own identity. Quote, no longer I, but thine, close quotes. This would be one way of thinking about it, one way of saying it. I acknowledge that it's not me, my conscious logical mind, my ego, thinking through how to digest my food or breathe or keep my heart beating. It's not me creating the flow of life. There is something bigger going on here. And my thoughts about it are not the same as it. My thoughts about myself are not the same as myself, capital S, self. The text goes on and says, when the mind has fully come to the recognition that no other decision holds value or purpose, and that no other decision can bring the soul the peace and the fulfillment it has sought in so many ways in the fields of illusion. When that happens, then the Creator takes the final step for you. When the mind finally recognizes it's already tried everything it can possibly think of, and nothing brings it home, nothing in the realm of thought, nothing in the realm of judgment, nothing in the realm of contraction, nothing within the realm of perception that breeds negative emotions, none of that leads me to the experience of unity with all creation. And once that happens, then creation itself takes the final step for me. It says, that is by an act of grace, that tiny drop of water that seemed to be so separate from the ocean dissolves and melts into the ocean itself. There is no longer a separate self to be found. The body-mind arises and continues for a little while, yet until its purpose is fulfilled, and then it is put aside as a toy that has been outgrown. So again, here's another reference to the fact that it's not my ego, it's not my sense of myself that gets any accolades here. I am not bringing myself back into awareness of my connection with all of creation. It is creation and this grace that has been implanted in me, this impetus within me that I can't explain. I didn't create it. It's just this compulsion, this urge I have to know the truth, to be with the truth, to allow the truth, to share only the truth. And in this paragraph, again, it says, this is that gift. It happens from creation itself taking the final step for you. This is by an act of grace. This is not under your volition. And perception recedes into its appropriate place as a simple tool. And the perception of myself as separate dissolves and is seen as simply a false representation of a greater experience of life. The text reads, the mind, the power of consciousness, slips into the perfect and eternal truth that has been true always. And here it is restated again, quote, there is only the love of creation. I am only in existence to express that truth, close quotes. The text goes on and says, in the way of perfect knowledge, all efforting is suspended. Only your ego is going to have an effort. Only your ego is going to try to know God. Only your ego is going to try and figure things out. But in the way of perfect knowledge, efforting is suspended, and the mind flows born of this energy that we call love, of the energy of creation. And it flows like the wind, not knowing where it comes from or where it is going, for its cares, its concerns are no longer of the world. Its certainty is in love, capital L love, the flow of life, the flow of creation. Peace pervades the eternity of the mind. I'm sorry, the entirety of the mind, there is just a peace. There is a solid, calm, centered knowing. Peace pervades the entirety of the mind wherever it happens to find its attention being placed. And all things of the world have been translated into merely devices whereby the capital T truth might be communicated to the entirety of creation, to every brother and every sister. For in truth, you are exactly that, perfectly equal, perfectly innocent, perfectly radiant, and shining forever. That's your true nature, and that's the true nature of everyone and everything you interact with. Watch the tension. Watch the beliefs if you were raised in any kind of a religion or spiritual tradition. Here comes the next statement. You become the anointed. Take a breath. Here comes another one. You become the Messiah. Oh, there are parts of the mind that want to rear up and say, how arrogant, this is blasphemy. I remember hearing about people like people that would teach the ancient Aramaic words, the gospel from the ancient Aramaic. I remember even in a Guy Finley talk, he said, you know, it's great that you people can laugh at this. This was probably about 15 or 20 years ago when I was listening to Guy Finley. He says, it's really good that you can laugh at this because there are places where I would say this and they would want to kill me. They would literally want to give me the death sentence because this is blasphemy in that religion or in that spiritual tradition. I know I've talked to people like Dale Allen Hoffman when he was first starting to learn this stuff, and he was studying the masters, Elaine Pagels and other people that worked with the ancient Aramaic, and they would get death threats back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when they would try to say, hey, there's a whole different experience when you read the original Aramaic and the scrolls. There's a whole different level of understanding this. It wasn't intended as a literal story. This is a metaphor or a parable. And people would really want, literally want, to inflict harm and or death upon people who would teach something that was different than their religious belief. So notice, we're not that far from this. We're 30 or 40 years away from this. Some would say 20, 10 years away from this. Some would say right now there's a resurgence of people in this country and other countries that are going to the extreme in the conservative religion, and they would once again say, you know, death to the blasphemers. Blasphemers, they say. So here we are. This book says you when you allow yourself to see the false nature of your perception, when you ask to be shown, when you let the Creator take the final step for you, when you rest in the silence in your mind, which is you rest in the place within your mind where you understand that everything your senses can show you is a tiny fraction of a tiny fraction of 1% of what's actually going on, then you have an experience that instantly goes beyond words. And you recognize the truth that is true always, that you are a part of creation, and so is everyone and everything you see. And that you are perfectly equal, perfectly innocent, perfectly radiant, and shining forever, because that's what creation is. When that happens, you become the anointed. When that happens, you become the Messiah. That which brings forth the word of creation. Dale Allen Hoffman does a whole series of talks about the word. What's the one word that is most difficult to translate from the ancient Aramaic into English? And he says word. And then he does an Abbott and Costello routine about, and then the interviewer says, no, what's the one word? And he says word. The word in the ancient scripture that says, and the word was made flesh and dwelt among them. What does that word mean? What did it come from? What was the actual word in the ancient Aramaic? Were they talking about a spoken word or a written word? And Dale's answer is no, it's not. It's the energy of creation. We don't have words for it. It's the energy of life. It's the energy within everything. It's the connection from one thing to another. It's the essence of life that they were referring to when they said the word. So when you rest in the understanding that your perceptions are at best very rough, they're like a kindergartner's etchings of a drawing of a horse or a person. Your perceptions are probably not even as accurate a representation of the truth of life as a kindergartner's pencil sketches of a horse or a person. And when you rest in that awareness, in your calm center, in your heart, then you realize a level of experience in life that cannot happen through your conscious logical mind, and you realize that you're perfectly equal, perfectly innocent, perfectly radiant, and shining forever, and so is everyone you interact with, regardless of what words and behaviors might be coming out of them in that moment. It's either going to be an extension of love or a cry for help and healing, but it's all the same creative energy in a flow. And when that happens, you become the anointed, you become the Messiah. What does that mean? That means you bring forth this energy of creation expressing in form. Here the word, the phrase is, you bring forth the word of God. You become the Christ. It's the same thing. You become a conduit for the creative energy expressing in form. Just notice the tension in you. Notice what comes up if you think, you know, my gosh, he's right. This is blasphemy. The church I was raised in, the religion I was brought up in, the community, half the people I knew in my family knew I was reading a book that says, I become the anointed, I become the Messiah, they would disown me. Breathe and soften and release the attachment to those fears and thoughts that generate those fears. Because this book says it's merely the return to an ancient remembrance of what has always been. The mind, having understood, surrendered all resistance to love, and it merely abides in the certainty of a perfect knowledge. This awaits you right now on just the other side of a final decision. Will you choose to accept the truth that is true always? Will you choose to drop your identification with the illusions of your perception, of every judgment, of every contraction, of every constriction, of every thought that leads to fear or anger or hurt or confusion or overwhelm? The text goes on and says, look well then at all that has transpired for you as you've listened to or read these past 12 lessons. Ask yourself, have the chance encounters, have these insights, have the visions, has all this been by chance? Has it been by accident? This book offers that that's hardly possible. For in the depth of your being, you chose to enter the way of transformation. You chose to open the depth of your being to a reflection of the truth that you already know. That truth that you already know has been given to you by an ancient brother who has loved you since before time is. One who has merely chosen to enact the extension of love in whatever way is available. Again, it's a brother. It's an equal. It's another spark of light. Call it a saint, call it Jesus, call it God, call it Master, call it Lord. It's just, if it's a consciousness, it's a part of the flow of life that you are a part of. And in this work, over and over again, they keep trying to get us to understand there is no hierarchy here. There is not a bunch of people who are holier than you are. There are not a bunch of saints. They aren't divided up into saints over here and sinners over there. They aren't divided up into the military hierarchy of pope and cardinal and archbishop and bishop and priest and deacon and lay people. It's not divided up that way. That's a human set of perceptions and labels. That the actual flow of life is that every human being, every consciousness is equal to every other consciousness. And the consciousness that's giving rise to this book and these set of lessons is absolutely, totally equal to you and every other person that's ever had consciousness. The text goes on and says, as I have said to you many times, I am not limited in how I communicate with any mind that would open a place for me. This pathway is but one of many. Yet it is the way in which you have made the decision to allow that communication to be known to your conscious mind. It is the context you have chosen to allow your release from fear and your embrace of love. Again, they want to bring it back to make it very, very simple. Everything about this work is the choice for love and the choice to release attachment to fear. It doesn't mean you won't have any fearful thoughts. It does mean that you do not have to give them value. You don't have to give them any priority in your life. You can see them moving through your mind and choose to give them the same value or priority as you would the leaves up here in the northern part of Illinois that are dropping off the trees and getting blown by the wind. Oh, there's another fearful thought. Oh, there's another worry. Oh, how fascinating. Right behind it, right next to it, right on top of it, right around it, are thoughts about love, thoughts about joy and aliveness, thoughts about connection. I think I'll value those. I think those are the ones I will talk to my brothers and sisters about. Those are the ones I will share. That's what I will use to teach only love. I will choose to share only my loving thoughts. This book, this set of teachings, is the context you have chosen to allow you to release from fear and embrace love. The text goes on and says, I once said unto you that all things that begin in time end in time. For their purpose is not to become a substitute for what is eternal. This is critical. We have used the things of time, the things of our perception, as a substitute for what is the flow of life, what God created in the way of mastery and the Course in Miracles, rather. Michael Rice talks about a whole set of lessons entitled, What is the World? And in that set of lessons, there are quotes in the Course in Miracles such as, perception was made as an attack on God. God is light. God is love. God is all there is. God is the flow of creation. It's not an entity. It's not like we're taking a spear and throwing it a human form that sits up in a cloud. But when we choose to value our perceptions rather than live in the question and understand we really don't know much of anything because we're looking at a tiny fraction of the data points that our senses can show us, and our senses don't even begin to touch a tiny fraction of everything that's there, so we learn to live in the question rather than value the perception, then we don't attack God. We ask the flow of life. We ask creation. We ask love and life itself to teach us. But when we think, oh, I know I'm right and he's wrong and she's wrong and that shouldn't be happening, and now we're pouring more value of our mind energy into the thoughts that are generated from the perceptions we are creating, my creation, as separate from the flow of life. How do I know that my creation is separate from the flow of life? I feel a tension. I feel a judgment. I feel a negative emotion. I can instantly know through the feedback system that the creation itself has given me that my thoughts are in error. The text again says, I once said to you that all things that begin in time end in time. For the purpose of those things that begin in time and end in time is not to be a substitute for what is eternal, but they are to be devices whereby the remembrance of the eternal is returned to every mind that is a part of being an offspring of creation. They use the term sonship here, but the words, something that's the son of is the offspring of. It's not a gender issue. But the devices of time, these things of matter and time, are to be a device whereby the remembrance of the eternal is returned to every mind in creation. That one mind, that mind of Christ in which you dwell and have your being. So the body and the tree and the car and the stereo and the job, you could choose to use them to extend only love, to teach only love in each moment, to awaken more and more in depth in yourself and in your brothers and sisters the truth that is true always. And that's the only value of the body, of the material world, of language in this work. To awaken yourself and then everyone else to the truth that is true always, to the one mind, the mind of Christ, in which you live and dwell and have your true being. The text goes on and says, the way of transformation then had a beginning and it has an end. The way of certain knowledge, which will comprise the next part of these lessons, it will also have a beginning and an end. Rest assured, I say unto you, that when the way of knowledge has been imparted to you, and you have come into the perfect blending in which you know that you walk the plane as awake as I ever did, then the purpose of this entire set of three books, The Way of Mastery, and our teaching period will have come to a conclusion. It's already said in previous lessons that the goal, the purpose of this work is to birth millions of minds awakened to their connection to the Christ mind, to their presence as a conduit for the Christ mind. That last paragraph again says, the way of transformation then, it had a beginning and it has an end. The way of certain knowledge, which will comprise the next part of these lessons, it will also have a beginning and an end. Rest assured, I say unto you, that when the way of knowledge has been imparted to you, and we have come into the perfect blending in which you know that you walk the plane as awake as Yeshua ever did, then the purpose of the way of mastery and our teaching, learning period will have come to a conclusion. The next paragraph reads, this does not mean that I will depart from where you are, but it does mean that you will have stepped into the certainty that you are that one. You are part of the one mind. And what you would seek to gain from me, you will find in the temple of your own heart. Therefore, I will join with you, not as your teacher or savior, but as your friend and equal and co-creator. You will be free then, because you will no longer be seeking knowledge from me. You will be extending love from the soul of your own beingness. And you will be free to invite me as a friend to join with you in your creations. That is an invitation I will gladly accept, for the purpose of creation is to extend love. The only purpose of creation is to extend love. So again, they're recommending to us, it's kind of gently slid in here, that we might choose to focus on a thought pattern that says, my purpose for being here, the only purpose for my having consciousness, the only purpose for me to be walking into a store, to be driving in a car, to be on an internet radio show, the only purpose is for me to be extending love in this moment. Now, again, it's a choice. You don't have to choose that as your purpose for being. You don't have to choose that as a pattern of thoughts that you pour your mind energy into. You don't have to let that inform your thoughts, your words, and your actions day in and day out. But they're suggesting that you give it a try. See how it changes your experience of life. And the next thought that comes into my mind is, and please, if you choose to do that, and then you wake up in 3 days and you realize you only did it for about half of the first day, please notice the thoughts that might come up to judge you and be harsh with you, and just release them. Oh, that's judgment. I've had that judgment pattern before. I have a lot of practice with that. I had a great-grandfather and a great-grandmother and a couple uncles that were really good at judging. Man, they would tell everybody that everybody's wrong and they're the only ones that are right. So I come by it naturally, and I don't need to give it any more importance in my life or in my thoughts than the leaves I see falling from the trees right now. It's just a potential. I could choose to define for myself that my true purpose in life, that the only true reason for my existence is to extend love in every interaction with every person. I'm working on a book, I'm listening to a book from Gay Hendricks, and the title of the book is The Big Leap. The rest of the title is Conquer Your Hidden Fear and Take Life to the Next Level, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And he talks about what happens when we recognize that we have things that we're not very good at all, things that we do pretty adequately, things that we do at an excellent level, and things that we can do at a genius level, and that everybody has a level of competence and a level of excellence and a level of genius. And right now, I can't tell you exactly what the connection is, why I'm thinking about that. But here's this idea that he puts forth in the book, that one of his focuses for his life is to help as many people as possible choose to live more and more of their life and actual time in their life focused on their level, their zone of genius, not their zone of excellence, not their zone of competence. This is what's getting stirred up in my mind when I read this part of the lesson. In lesson 24, that it says, when you integrate the messages, when you do this practice, when you have blended and integrated the knowledge, rest assured, I say unto you, that when the way of knowledge has been imparted to you and you've come into the perfect blending in which you know the truth that is true always, when you keep that top of mind as you move through the day and you realize that you're walking on the earth as awake as Yeshua ever did, that's when the purpose of the way of mastery and our teaching learning period will have come to a conclusion. If you're doing that, I think it's the same kind of thing that Gay Hendricks is talking about. When you live from your level of genius, when you're connected to the flow, when you're doing what flows out of you most easily, most creatively, leaving you most in the bliss state, the text reads, you will be free then, because you'll no longer be seeking knowledge from me or anybody outside of you. You will be extending love from the soul of your own beingness. I think that's the same thing that Gay Hendricks is talking about when he's talking about people living from their zone of genius. There's a flow of life energy coming through people in creation, creativity. It's generative. It's beneficial to self and others. Wonderful creative ideas happen. Connection with others happens when you're living in your zone of genius. And when that happens, the text reads, then when that happens, you'll be free to invite me as a friend to join with you in your creations. This is an invitation that I will gladly accept, because the only purpose of creation is to extend the creation energy, the love, the flow of life. We can struggle. There are certain things that we're not very good at all. There are certain things that we're adequate at. There are certain things that we're excellent at. And there will be certain things for each human being where it's actually genius. It just flows out of them almost effortlessly and to a greater degree than anyone around them. When you have your zone of genius, when you've identified it and you choose to live from there, I think you'll be doing what they're talking about here in the way of mastery, lesson 24. You'll no longer be seeking knowledge from people and things outside of you. You will be extending love from the soul of your own beingness. And it's a choice. You could choose, hey, this is what I'm going to be doing. This is what I'm going to value. I'm going to value this more than I value the work I'm doing at my job. It doesn't mean I necessarily quit my job. It just means that as I'm doing that job, I find a way to spend more and more of my time throughout the day when I'm not on the job or when I am on the job, being willing to extend love, being willing to see the truth of my nature and the nature of the people around me, and asking to be shown what's mine to do here, and watching how the flow of life and thoughts and interactions changes when I do that, when I stay centered in the truth of my nature and the truth of the nature of the beings of brilliance and light around me. How does that change everything about my life experience? Every word that comes out of my mouth, every behavior that I emit. The next section is titled Fulfilling Your Purpose. And it says, relationship is eternal. Friendship is eternal. Co-creativity is the essence of knowing God or creation itself. Co-creativity has the sole purpose of birthing in light the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Co-creativity has the sole purpose of bringing the vibration of truth, and it reflects it in the world of time. It touches fear and dissolves it. It touches guilt and replaces it with forgiveness. It touches resistance and tension and replaces it with willingness and peace. And then it asks, can there be any purpose in existence but this? For this, you were birthed in the holy mind of your Creator. And for this, you have journeyed through the labyrinths of everything unlike love, that you might truly choose to return with perfect freedom into the marriage of Creator and created, divine child, divine spark. For the union of Father and Son and Creator and offspring, Creator and created, that union is so intimate and so perfect and so filled with the perfection of love itself that in truth you will look and see no longer where you end and the Creator begins. You will be like the perfect lover of creation, given over to that love, pervaded by that love, melting with that love. And yet you will always know that you are the created. You are like the wave to the ocean. You are like the sunbeam to the sun. You will marvel with every breath. Spaciousness will come to the mind and even into the cells of the body in which you abide in the knowingness beyond conceptualization, beyond the reach of all beliefs, beyond every hope of religion. You will abide in the reality of the living spirit of the living energy of creation. The way of transformation then comes to a conclusion as you sit quietly with yourself and look upon the past 12 lessons, the insights, the changes, the chance encounters, and you accept and you know that the being, the mind, the perceptions that began 12 lessons ago no longer exists except as an echo of an ancient memory. And you no longer need to invest the power of your identity in what has passed away. The way of certain knowledge begins with this. Rest assured that the time you spend in contemplation before you begin the next part of this course, which will be known as the way of knowing, that time that you spend in transfer in contemplation is your final transition if you will accept it. It's, as I said over and over throughout this, it's a choice, and it's a choice you can make right now. So, that's all we're going to read for today. We've got 5 or 6 minutes left. Time for a comment or a question or an answer or a poem or a favorite quote. I think I mentioned I did an interview with a gentleman who's an adjunct professor at Notre Dame, and he used to walk around with notebooks and write things down and write quotes down, and later on in life, people started bugging him about it. But he kept at it anyway. And now he's published two separate books of quotes, full of quotes. One by Abraham Lincoln here. I just opened the book and it says, if I had 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first four sharpening the axe. So, what's your favorite quote? How is this landing for you? What would you like to see us do next? Should we race through and try and get through all 12 lessons in the Way of Knowing before the end of the year? Here's a quote from the Buddha. Holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one who gets burned. Area code 541. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Yes, this is Linda.
Welcome.
And I have a favorite poem for you. It was written by my yoga teacher when I took my yoga certification training, and I bought this book that he wrote. He has a poem in it that he wrote. I'd like to share that real quick. It's short.
All right.
What if our religion was each other, if our practice was our life, if prayer our words? What if the temple was the earth, if forests were our church, if holy water, the rivers, lakes, and oceans? What if meditation was our relationships, if the teacher was life, if wisdom was self-knowledge, if love was the center of our being? And it's Ganga White.
Lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Would you like me to send that to you?
Please.
Okay. And maybe you can share it with the support group or whatever, in whatever context that it rings true for. Very good. And I don't want you to rush through. I enjoy the repetition, and I'm learning a lot. And this was a very wonderful reading to reread today for the challenges that I'm going through at the moment.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Well, we are probably going to just see how it unfolds. You know, if we get through this in a one-year period, that means we're going through it three times as fast as it was originally presented, because it took 3 years for this work to be dispersed in three separate books, the first two, one per month for each year, and then the last one just 11 months. So thank you for the call. I will mute you so you can listen into the second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. And I'll send you the list. I know we'll do a pre-recording tomorrow because we'll be on the road, and I'm not sure about Thursday and Friday yet. So I'll send you a text and let you know.
All right. Wonderful. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Okay, bye. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Tuesday, October the 18th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Michael and I will be leaving tomorrow morning sometime and heading towards Kansas City. And we're going to take the trip in 2 days, so we won't get the whole way tomorrow, but we will be driving. So we're probably going to play the Why book, the fifth hour. We had already played the first 4 hours of it. So we'll play the fifth one, and then we'll see what happens on Thursday and Friday, whether we're where we can do the show live or whether we need to do another pre-recording. But tomorrow will definitely be a pre-recorded show. And we'll welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we get to move into the next level of comprehension of this awesome ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness. And if you'll excuse me for a minute here, I've got Ari Rain, and she was just asking if she could watch a, did you want to watch a planet video or a body video, anatomy video? Which one would you like, sweetie?
It's amazing.
Alexa,
the
find
knowledge
a planet
that
video.
She already has. And so, anyway, you might want to mute while you and Alexa are having a conversation.
I did.
So, anyway. Yeah, she's doing well. She, you know, is in school half a day now. And so she's learning her alphabet and how to write her name and a few things. They're not teaching her stuff that we were teaching her here, like the names of the planets and the names of all your intestines and your guts and your stomach. She can take her little model man apart and can tell you by looking at the organ what the organ is and what it does and where it goes in the body. So it's not too many four-year-olds that can do that. And she can tell you which planet's closest to the sun and what color they are and which planet we live on. And so she's getting a wide variety of education, and we're thankful for the education she's giving us. So, and you can
2000%.
Ask her, why are we here? Yeah, you can say, why are we here? And she will say,
Aria, Nini's asking the question, why are we here? There you go. You got it,
to
girl.
To be love.
You could hear that?
Yeah, we could hear it.
Cool. Yeah, we're blessed. We're blessed that this girl is such a sweet presence of love with us. We are awesomely blessed. And we're getting to go out and see our newest girl, who's only been out of the wrapper for a month now. We're going to go and get to meet Kaylee Jo. And for those that know my son, Michael J., and his wife, Jamie, they gave birth to Kaylee Jo about a month ago. And seeing as how he took a month off work, we decided that the best time to go and visit was going to be after he was having to go back to work so we could be there as support. So that's what we're doing. Getting ready to head off tomorrow for about a 13-hour drive. We'll stop and see Krista. For those who know my daughter Krista, we'll stop and see her on the way, and we'll rock and roll. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have any questions from the app or email questions or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
No questions in the chat room and no hands up. I'm just now flipping over. I think we covered all of the questions that came through email, but let me just double check. I believe that we had answered them. Also, Julie has extended. She had said she would match dollar for dollar up to 1,000 through the 15th. But then yesterday she said she would extend that through this week. And we're really close. But like she said, there's no reason to stop at, you're close, I don't need to donate. You know, all of it helps. So we're thankful. And if you give this week, you double your money because she's going to match it. So,
yay.
But I am not seeing any questions that we have not addressed.
Okay. Well, then let's get into some of the forgiveness work we're going to be sending out an article that integrates a number of different disciplines. We're going to send it out on our newsletter. If you're not signed up for our newsletter, if you go to the website, whyagain.org, and the newsletter link, Jeannie, is down toward the bottom now?
Yes, it's down at the bottom, and it says to sign in for a newsletter. I'm rolling down at the same time, so I can say exactly what it says. If you scroll all the way down, and it says, let's keep in touch. And then there's also another one that is a big heart, and it says, join our mailing list. And so you just click on that, and it'll ask for your name and your email. And then that will put you on the list. So when we send out our newsletter, you'll automatically get it. And if you haven't been getting them, you can actually go to multimedia and news, and you'll see a link that says newsletters. And I have included the links to all of the past newsletters. And let me see if I'm up to date. No, I've got a couple that I need to stick out there. But anyway, all the links are out there, so you can click on them and read all of the newsletters too. So I'll leave that screen up to remind me to do that today.
So the focal point of the newsletter is going to be an article called The Complete Joy Prescription. Why does that mean to be again subtitled The Complete Joy Prescription? And basically it's going to be synthesizing the ancient Aramaic healing tools with the latest in scientific understanding and technology, as well as the technology in the support realm for enhancing vitality within the human system in particular. And you know, you've heard us talk a little bit about the Avicen, but there's more. I actually did a training for the corporation, for Avicen Corporation, on the parasympathetic nervous system and how it is enhanced. Its function and blood flow, energy flow is enhanced by the Avicen. So we did a training on that. So there'll be a link in there that you can get a much deeper look at the autonomic nervous system and how it operates, and, you know, look toward, you know, especially if your mind tells you when your system goes into an alarm stage, that you need to start looking inside rather than looking out there for the problem. Most of the world has told us that it's somewhere out there. And so it's kind of a relearning experience that we're going to be inviting people to go through with this article, have a number of links in it, and recognizing if you want to get out of the alarm phase in your physiology back to serenity, then sooner or later you have to start to become a student of your own mind. Learn to read the signals that the nervous system is in distress and in need of internal healing. You know, these are not skills that the average mind has been taught in our culture. And so this article is going to focus on bringing forward those skills and having the brain cells that underlie and make sense of those skills in a world where the belief is, you know, most people's beliefs based in projection most often, or very rarely do you hear somebody saying, you know, this is such and such a thing happened in my world, and boy, that really brought a lot of upset for me. I had anger inside of me. I had fear. I had sadness. I had grief. You rarely hear anybody say things like that. What do they say? Oh, yeah, that happened, and boy, when that happened, it made me so mad and so angry and so sad and so afraid. And so what we're looking to do with this is to re-educate the mind and bring us back to understanding the truth. If my physiology goes into alarm, I have a problem. And so I want to touch in and start to learn about self-care, self-healing, and literally how to make your unconscious mind, your biology, and your nervous system user-friendly. A lot of people, their minds, their bodies, their unconscious minds are enemies. You know, the slightest thing happens in the world, triggers something inside, and all of a sudden, physiology goes berserk, and the mind plays the projection game, the problems outside of me. And so we're looking to re-educate and move into a different space with that idea. So recognizing that the understatement of the century is that, you know, the mind is a poorly understood device. And, you know, in the article I use the analogy of a computer, and we know that if the inputs of the computer, you know, the internet connection's bad or the modem isn't functioning properly or the keyboard's broken, well, you know, the computer's not going to be very stable. It's not going to be very functional. And in exactly the same way, the set in the human mind, the inputs, when they're optimized, they empower everyone to live a fulfilled life. But if there's trauma in a family system or a community system, the controlling dynamics of the nervous system of the minds involved, you know, just go totally unrecognized or worse, they're ignored. So in the last 50 years spent developing this work, what we want to engage people in is recognizing and understanding that you can totally, what should I say, totally comprehend the healing of this human body-mind unit. It's a totally understandable process. It takes a little patience to get there. But when we wake up to who we are, and we start to build the brain cells, the game changes. One of the challenges that I point out here is that we've got two distinct words that represent a single happening, a single event. And an example of that is, you know, I've got a coin. The coin is a single event. But we look at it from one perspective and we say, oh, there's the head of the coin. We look at it from the other perspective and we say, oh, there's the tail of the coin. And we tend to think that the head and the tail are separate. But I defy you to remove the head from the tail of the coin. It can't be done. The coin is a single event because we take one perspective of the head, another perspective of the tail doesn't mean they're separate. They are one in the same object. Well, with this, you know, and we oftentimes call the body-mind unit, it's precisely the same. It is one object, and if we look at it from one side, we see the mind. If we look at it from the other side, we see what we call the body. But you can no more take the mind out of the body or the body out of the mind than you can take the head away from the tail of the coin or the tail away from the head because they're one object. And we're looking at them from different perspectives. And my offering is that that coin is a single indivisible object. Body and mind are a single individual object. And if we don't understand that, you know, we live in a culture, in fact, you can look at some scientific history and such, and they'll tell you about how back in the time of Descartes, and there was a conflict, and the church said, okay, you take the mind, we'll take the soul, you take the body. And they made this artificial division, again, like you could separate the head of the coin from the tail of the coin. And so if you can't get past the belief that the body and the mind are separate or, you know, have nothing to do with each other, you will never understand healing. You will never reach a healed state. So that's the starting point for a true healing regimen. Really important key to understand. Came across a quote recently from George Bernard Shaw, and he says, "Beware of false knowledge. It is more dangerous than ignorance." You know, you can look at that in so many realms. You look at it in the political realm today and the amount of false knowledge that there is, quote-unquote knowledge, and then recognize it's not knowledge at all. It's just plain old-fashioned ignorance. And so we're looking to get past some of the old-fashioned ignorance that passes in our culture as passes as a truth, but in fact is completely, totally, and 100% false. Like the body and the mind are separate. So to eradicate that ignorance becomes important. You know, in the computer world, if there are faulty inputs, we label it as corrupt data. And if the corrupt data isn't corrected, everybody knows the computer's going to fail. It's not going to complete any of its tasks successfully. Somehow people think that a life produced by an unhealed mind should be different than that. It's not. Faulty input to the mind, corrupt data, and you'll recall we've said over and over that anything that moves in your mind, which means moves in your body, based on hostility or fear, is corrupt data. So if you get faulty input into the human realm, it's going to produce failure the same as it does in the computer realm. Hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, divorce, separation, starvation, they're all a result of faulty energetic patterns within the human structure. So, you know, it's almost at the point where rage and conflict and relationship failure is so common today that it's thought of as normal and unavoidable. And those results are not just the luck of the draw. There's a reason for every failure in the human realm. And the reason we're offering is usually in the mind, reflected as biology. So anything where hatred or fear moves in the mind corrupts the functioning of the mind and the body. And, you know, to verify that for yourself, just notice that every time in your life that you've done something that you now regret, the feeling that was moving when you did whatever it was that motivated you to do what you regret was some form of fear or hostility. It is always corrupt data. And that's the time to stop, pay attention to, and reset your nervous system. One of the functions of the Avacyn is to reset the autonomic nervous system from a state of alarm, or what's called sympathetic dominance, into a state of parasympathetic activity. And when the parasympathetic is activated, higher faculties open up, higher understanding opens up, and physiology shifts into a place where it functions better. So if fear or hostility go unaddressed in a relationship, family, a community, a nation, or between nations, it is 100% predictable that people are going to suffer and lives will be destroyed. So it's just the way it works. And a principle that has been recognized for thousands of years very powerfully informs us that one's initial relationships must be secure to have a highly functioning, reliable mind. And when that mind is functioning properly, a successful life is a given. It's done. Of course, within the confines of existing circumstances. Now, of course, we live in a culture with some pretty bizarre definitions of success. You know, we've all heard of the billionaire businessman whose marriage fails, his children commit suicide, and people call him successful. It takes a pretty extreme self-deception to believe that that kind of a life is a success. But it does lock people into false goals and false promises. So our offering is, if there has been damage inflicted in one's early life, those traumas must be faced and healed. And when they are, they become the starting point for a truly joyful and stable and fulfilled life. Sadly, the ignorant would rather hide those healing opportunities, wondering why their lives are scarred repeatedly by family conflict, unhappiness, physical strain, shutdown, illness. Gee, why is there financial difficulty? Why am I abusing alcohol or drugs? Why am I overeating? Why is there financial failure? Those things are not without cause. And my offering is that 100% of the time, their cause has to do with the corrupt data in the mind. Now, if you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, we'll tie this back into the ancient teachings, you'll remember that there's an archery term that was used in the Aramaic that when you fired at the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would use this particular word. And the word would be an equivalent to what we're talking about here as corrupt data. The word in Aramaic was sin, kata. And it's been twisted and turned, but all it means is that there is corrupt data happening within the human system in order to produce failure of any kind, failure to thrive. Actually, when somebody's in an extreme sympathetic dominant state, they used to have it as a medical diagnosis for babies, that babies would die within the first few weeks of their lives. And what they called it was failure to thrive. But what it really was the sympathetic nervous system was so active that, you know, when sympathetic dominance occurs, digestion doesn't. So if the sympathetic nervous system of the child or anyone is active, then digestion doesn't occur. The building of red blood cells doesn't occur. Elimination doesn't occur properly. There are many, many things that happen. And the reason is because there is corrupt data within the system, what in Aramaic would be called sin. And you remember in the Aramaic, they said the wages of sin is death. Now, I can remember being a kid and thinking, you know, that was some kind of a threat from God. God's going to get you for your sins. It's like, no. They were just telling us about physiology, how the system worked. So unresolved ancient inputs, including generational traumas, skeletons hidden in the family closet, inevitably exert their influence on the mind and the body at the most important and opportune moments of one's life. I know that I've done work with and I've had the experience of, you know, being under stress, being under the control of sympathetic dominance, being under the control of some form of hostility or fear, and saying or doing something that created mass destruction. And many people wish, oh, I wish I could take that back, what I said, what I did. It's kind of like too late. Those types of situations always happen when the nervous system is on high alert. And when the nervous system is on high alert, higher intelligence is blocked. Literally, the blood flow to the parts of the brain that have our highest cortical functions are shut down in sympathetic dominance. Basically, all of the non-survival functions of the structure are shut down when extreme survival is at stake. And so if one lives in that extreme survival state, the energy patterns running their minds and bodies are those energies that are off the mark, are corrupt data. And, you know, in the ancients, when they talked about sin, there's been a whole big thing made about it, as opposed to just understanding it's got to do with the energies that we're engaging in. And that, you know, the untoward energies we hold will always tend to come up in a demanding way at those times that are really important. Psychiatrist Carl Jung, he explained it very well. He said this, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. Now, I would offer that having an unconscious mind is a totally unnatural thing for a human being. It is an artificial creation that comes from living in denial. And so, you know, if you talk to the average psychologist, they'll tell you that 80, perhaps 90, 95, even in some estimates, 98% of our thinking is unconscious. That means that 98% of our thinking relates to corrupt data, relates to, quote unquote, sin. And that's why we keep it unconscious. If it were acceptable data, there'd be no reason to keep it hidden away. So the primary keys to freeing the mind of the past inflicted physical or emotional traumas is to reset the mind and reopen the energy field to flow in the body so that this structure is receptive to joy, well-being, aliveness. And guess where it all starts? Interestingly enough, it starts with one's mindset and physiological state when thinking of or interacting with parents or those that operated as parents, the first inputs, one's first authority in life. If one's physiological state is uptight, the restriction of blood and energy flow will impact health in a myriad of ways and mental function. And just stop for a minute and think about it. Have you ever expressed rage? And if you just tap into a point where maybe you did that or imagine yourself doing that again, perhaps. Notice what you have to do to your body to rage. Medically, that state is called sympathetic dominance, where the avacyn comes in is the avacyn resets the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic, opens energy flow to the parasympathetic nervous system, which has to do with the vagus nerve, and it has to do with rest and digest, recover, rebuild, and heal. Somebody lives in continuous sympathetic dominance? It's just not possible. The mind can't think outside of the box that it's in. And so creating a safe space and understanding is a powerful piece of the puzzle of waking up to who we are. So if a mind's internal set, its underlying unconscious attitude, is based in trauma and insecurity, life and relationships automatically become a struggle, health becomes a challenge, and the projection of unresolved pain interferes with everything one touches. It's kind of like the reverse of the mind is touch. What we're looking to do is to recognize that the natural state of us as human beings is to have the Midas touch, that everything you touch turns to gold. Everything you touch comes up smelling like roses. Everything you turn your attention to supports, nurtures, and serves you. But if you look at anything in your world through the eyes of corrupt data, Paul said 2,000 years ago, we see as though through a glass darkly. And you remember, if you look at Paul's writing, there's a whole passage where he talks about, in essence, what he says is, I don't have a clue. He says, why is it the things I would do, you know, the good stuff I want to do, he says, I can't do. And the things I would not do are what I do. So here's somebody who's considered, you know, top tier, man, he took it to the world, and he didn't know how to touch the mainspring of his own internal dynamics and bring healing to them. And what that comes down to is he had not met the man, did not understand the teachings of the man who knew exactly how to touch the mainspring of his own internal dynamics, the man named Yeshua. He knew exactly how to free the mind of those energetic patterns that are less than love. and return to the place where physiology is fueled by love. And again, the primary inputs. Unresolved parental relationship issues tend to be the root of, you know, the most bizarre controlling power person dynamics, where one finds themselves, you know, despite having sworn I'll never be like them, repeatedly doing the very behaviors that they hated most that their power persons did. Again, usually parents. Unconscious of what's going on under the surface, one finds oneself perceiving life, especially when under stress, both unwittingly and unwillingly through the lens of their power person. The person who at one time was not functioning out of love had more power over their lives than they did, and in that circumstance, they perceived it as survival. So that primary relationship is a big key in the healing process. Now, the ancients cautioned, they said, look to the lives of the fathers, of course, by implication, the mothers, for ours is but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. So when you realize that the energetic dynamics of your generations were passed on to you through your parents, this becomes a pretty important relationship. There's also a rather peculiar but little understood problem with the human mind. Paul talks about it and he says, we see as though through a glass darkly. Now, this particular statement comes in a passage where there's a conversation about experiencing love, which in essence, remember, is the creator. In the Greek translations, there's kind of a mysterious word that's used as darkly from the ancient Greek sources. And I don't have this word based in the Aramaic, but in the ancient Greek, it talks about that word darkly is really the word enigma. If you think about an enigma, it's something that's mysterious, it's puzzling, it's difficult to understand. And here's this guy, Paul, who gives us this darkly quote, we're trying to comprehend or experience life and love through a mind that has been darkened by corrupt data, by hostility or fear. And, you know, he says, you know, he just can't figure it out. And he admits to himself, why is it the thing, again, the things I would do, I cannot do, and the things I would not do or want to do, the things I hate. He actually uses the word hate there. So what do you do with all that? You begin to apply forgiveness. Forgiveness is a tool for cleaning up your perceptual mind. Now, most of us have not been taught, or we've been falsely taught, what perception is. We've been falsely taught what its source is, how and what it's created from. And until you have the brain cells to really comprehend it, until you take the time and become a student of your own mind, perception, the output of the mind, is truly mysterious, puzzling, and difficult to understand. Because what the mind does, you have a digital to analog converter. The mind takes digital information, your thoughts, turns them into pictures. You know, the same way that a TV set takes a signal that's coming into it and makes a picture out of it, your mind takes the signals, thoughts you hold, and turns them into pictures. And so we see our thoughts in form, and then we've been tricked into believing that the form is outside of us. Because we see it through our eyes, and of course we're looking at it out there, right? Well, that's one of the biggest lies that's ever been told. The eye is a one-way valve. Yes, light information comes in to the eye. Nothing goes out. You can't see out through your eyes. And you do not see with your eyes. Your brain, according to what the light energy coming into your eye resonates in you, your brain literally makes up the whole perceptual world. It is purely a construct of the mind. So these are things that have been hidden about perception. And they're urgent to understand if you want to clean up your life and free yourself from victimhood and blame. So perception is nothing but a construct of the mind. The CIA intelligence research tells us this, quote, this is straight out of their writing on human intelligence. Perception is demonstrably an active rather than passive process. It constructs rather than records reality. So your mind, based on its content, literally constructs the world that you see. Now, being nothing but a construct of the mind must have its source data firmly grounded in a solid foundation in truth rather than corrupt data. Otherwise, the accuracy of the internal guidance system is going to be destroyed. Corrupt data destroys lives. What's the signal there's corrupt data? Wherever there's hostility or fear. We've been taught to rely on hostility or fear, most of us, all of our lives. Whenever one takes action out of corrupt data, out of hostility or fear, in any of its forms, it always leads to problems and regret. So every construct the mind produces not only reflects one's highly charged energetic experiences, and those highly charged experiences take over perception and show us a picture world that has little or nothing to do with the actual world as it is, with actuality. Ever witnessed a dozen people in a courtroom testifying about the accident they were all at, you'll notice that only two of them have the same descriptors. Because each person has a construct of their own. And you'd almost wonder if any two of them were at the same accident at times. So when you understand this, when you have the brain cells for this, you go, oh, okay. So now what forgiveness does is it removes the charge, especially from those primary relationships, so that the mind is no longer darkened by those dynamics. It brings correction. And once healing occurs, once you bring those parts of the mind, presence of love, everything falls in place. So there's a foundation for our conversation today, some thoughts that perhaps might trigger some insight into some work that you might be ready to do. You know, the mind that's in its state of hostility or fear always has a story with which it proclaims itself right, and it already knows everything. And, you know, there's that old saying to the person who tells you in their dire circumstances that they already know everything. It says, if you're so smart, why ain't you rich? If you're so smart, why ain't you happy? If you're so smart, why don't you have wondrous, wonderful relationships? Maybe you're not as smart as you think. But the mind in denial and dissociation always has somebody or something else to blame. So the objective of this work is an invitation to say, maybe I could review some of these early inputs that I have, and if they're based in corrupt data, if they're based in hostility or fear, then perhaps I could remove those things And then you come across the tool of forgiveness. The word forgive in Aramaic has nothing to do with I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. The word forgive is the tool with which you remove the content of your mind, with which you free yourself of that corrupt data, especially related to those early relationships, those power person dynamics. Because once the power person dynamic takes over, what does it take for a power person dynamic to take over a mind? Stress. If there's a power person dynamic in the mind, then stress will activate it. And the power person dynamic is based in three things. There are three things that occur simultaneously for a power person dynamic to be installed in the mind. And I would offer this as what runs the world. And until one understands and accesses their own power person dynamics, their whole lives are basically going to be run by those dynamics. So the three things that go into creating a power person dynamic are, number one, the power person, usually a parent, though not always, has more power over the child than the child has. Two, the power person is not functioning as a human being, is not functioning as love. And three, the child, again, it's usually a child in those situations, perceives the circumstance as survival. They perceive that their literal viability, their literal ability to survive is threatened. When that occurs, the child's energy field opens wide, becomes a sponge, and sucks in every survival energy, everything that, and the child will perceive. It will link this up to, oh, these are the energies that create survival. So if there's a raging power person, then the corrupt data of that power person's rage is going to be absorbed into the very gut of the child, and the child's going to hold that, ah, this is how you survive. This is how you win. And in the future, once those dynamics are installed, there are only three possible behaviors for that power person, or for that person, and it's all related to the power person. The three behaviors are related to the level of stress that one is under. When there's no stress, we'll do whatever we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, we'll do whatever we did to resist and survive with our power person. And when we become ultra-stressed, we'll do what our power person did to us that we hated the most. Offering, that's what runs the world. And so under great stress, people will act 100% against their own best interests. And then when the stress goes away, they'll scratch their heads and go, gee, I wonder why that happened. Why is this happening to me again? If you have not read my book, it's out of print, so we can't sell you one. You can go to Amazon or YouTube, and they usually have a few copies, a dozen or so copies for $3, $4, $5. You can order. We've seen them for up to $3,000. I don't know if anybody ever bought one at that. If so, I might go back into reprinting and go back into selling the book. In any event, and so you can usually buy a pretty inexpensive copy on Amazon or eBay, and or you can go to our website, whyagain.org. You'll see in the middle of the page a picture of the book. If you click on the book, it'll drill down, and you'll find links to at least 8 or 9 different translations of the book. So you can go and download it free and read, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It will explain to you in very practical terms the process of forgiveness and help to build the brain cells for getting to a different state than living in that survival state that happens when the power person dynamic is activated. And the reason, my take, the reason why people, when they're ultra stressed, you know, there are three behaviors again. No stress will do what we did to get along with our power person. Stress starts to build, we'll do what we did to resist and survive, become ultra-stressed, and we'll do whatever our power person did to us that we hated the most. That runs the world. And the reason why we do whatever our power person did that we hated the most, it's because in those moments of hating what was being done to us, it was survival. And that energy that was being absorbed from the environment, you know, if the power person was in rage or grief or sadness or whatever it was, if that energy is going to be drawn in and linked in the mind, remember the file folder effect, linked in the mind to survival. And so 100% against one's own will and choice, there will be the inclination to do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. Now, you may be strong enough not to do that. Few people are. And so one will do that behavior because they've looked into their unconscious and said to themselves, you know, metaphorically said to themselves, I wonder what God, i.e. my power person, did in order to survive when the stress was up and the chips are down. Oh, yeah, I hated it when they raged at me, but that's how you win. So now, 20, 40, 60, 70 years later, this person is still playing out, and I mean literally right down to the word patterns of their power person. They'll say the same words. And we can have several power persons in our lives. Different circumstances or situations may involve a different power person. The key way you tell who your power person is in any given circumstance is, when you're under that extreme stress, whose behavior do you replicate? And if you find yourself replicating mom's behavior, then you know that in that circumstance, mom is your power person. If you replicate big brother or big sister, which often happens, if you replicate dad's behavior, then you know who your power person was. And as you utilize the reality management forgiveness process, what it does is it empowers you to remove the energies that are off the mark, the corrupt data, so that you can return your structure to a balanced place where, rather than sympathetic dominance, fear, fight, flight, freeze happens, and there's not a word that really goes along with it, but or an F word that fits with it. So the other word is stupidity. When one goes into that sympathetic dominant state, higher cortical functions are cut off. There is no ability to reason beyond the level of emotional maturity of the experience with the power person. And you can hear the reasoning ability of someone when they go into that state, because they'll proclaim the silliest things are true. The things that a four-year-old believed from a power person, they'll proclaim as true. And they're just not true. So the forgiveness process is a way to break down those dynamics in the mind, return oneself to a place where every cell is actively connected to love and all hostility and fear is dissolved. Remember that the dissolution of hostility or fear, the removal of hostility or fear, is called forgiveness in Aramaic. Yes, the Greeks turned it backward. They made forgiveness into, I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. What we're looking to do is to restore the actual meaning of the technology, of the tool. And it's the most brilliant tool you will ever see on planet Earth, because it changes power person dynamics in the human mind, in the human body, in the human nervous system, in physiology. It's called forgiveness. And it removes sin. Now, not in the churchianity way of, oh, you're a terrible sinner. It just is a way to remove every energy that's off the mark, every energy that never belonged in you. It's how it's removed. And if you go into an alert nervous system condition, sympathetic dominance, you know, in the article that we're going to be sending out, we're going to include a video of the training that I did with Avison Corporation on sympathetic, parasympathetic, who did it for medical professionals, their medical practitioners training. So that'll be in there so you can listen to that. And it really ties together all of this technology. And, of course, the Avicen is a device that the simple placing of your hand in the device activates sympathetic dominance, moves structure back toward a balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic. And if somebody's been chronically in a sympathetic dominant state, then the blood that has pooled around the closed down microcirculatory vessels, which tends to get crusted and totally congested over time, what the Avicen does is it softens, it breaks up the congestion, so the restoration of blood flow to those organs of rest, digest, recuperate, rebuild, and heal is enhanced. And so in a nutshell, that's kind of what's going to be on its way coming in your direction. And if you have any interested in taking your work to the next level, or you have any interest in the Avicen, drop Jeannie an email. We are distributors, and I have a friend who's a naturopath who introduced me to the device a little better than 2 years ago, and we've been using it daily for 2 years, and I think it's the most profound and powerful natural healing device possible. It's the only device I know of, only FDA-approved medical device that when people use it regularly say, I love the side effects of my medical treatment. There's no other medical treatment that I know of that anybody ever says they love it. And the reason is because it opens microcirculation throughout the structure. It moves people out of sympathetic dominance. It restores blood flow to the higher centers of the brain so higher cortical functions can occur. It restores blood flow throughout the whole structure so that the organs that have to do with rest, digest, and thrive are resupplied with blood flow, where congestion has been the order of the day for people who've lived continuously in sympathetic dominance. So that's kind of what's coming on its way in our next newsletter, which will be within the next couple of days. I'm actually working on finishing off this article. And if you're not on our mailing list and you'd like to be and receive that newsletter, just go to whyagain.org. Go down to the very bottom of the page. You'll see a link that says sign up for our mailing list. There's a big heart beside it. Click the heart and sign up, and when the newsletter comes out, you'll get a copy of it. Beyond that, Miss Jeannie, we're down at, geez, I was long-winded today. We've got less than 7 minutes left. So do we have anybody out there in the phone? Or do you have anything to add to that conversation, sweetie?
No, you covered it very well, and got a couple texts from people that they felt like you were talking to them, and we don't have a hand up. So we're down to, actually, if we played the outro, we're down to 5 minutes. So it's time for a quick question. Oh,
well, if you were one of the ones that texted that I was talking to you, then make sure that you're signed up to the mailing list so you get a copy of this, because it's going to go through. I've got links upon links upon links to just take you into every aspect of the process. And or if you're in a position to and you have an interest in it, you might want to think about adding an Avicen to your health regimen. It's just the most amazing device. Over the past 2 years, we've introduced about, I think, 55 or 56 people to the Avicen, and maybe 6 or 7 of them said, I put my hand, it didn't do anything for me. Every other person has gotten themselves a machine. It's that powerful impact in terms of whole body health. My take is it's the most profoundly powerful adjunct to health that I've ever seen. So if you're interested in that, in the getting the article, sign up for the newsletter or drop Jeannie an email, Jeannie@whyagain.org, Jeannie, and give her your phone number. There's actually one of the things that's motivated me to put this together for this, at this particular time and put in the newsletter is that they do have a major sale on through this Sunday night, and there's a significant discount. And so if anybody's interested in that, drop us a note and let's have a talk about it. So let's talk to our caller, Jean.
Okay, we got about 4 minutes. I believe it's Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi.
Welcome in,
hi,
lady.
Hi, guys. Hi. This relates, and your talk triggered it. There was a question in the personal code evaluation that I think I didn't tell the truth on, not intentionally, but it asked something like, I often or always know what's wrong with somebody else. Do you remember mm-hmm. that question, and can you put it into the language that it was in?
I don't have the specific wording, no.
Yeah. Well, I answered no.
I do the evaluation every once in a while myself for my own, just to get my own feedback. But it's not something that, when somebody does an evaluation, I go over every question and go, oh, they answered that one right or wrong, or this one good or bad. That's all done by computer, the analysis of the end result. So, no, I don't have that memorized.
So would you add, though, that you know what's wrong with other people or that you don't?
Yeah. I think I've been going along thinking that I do know, and I didn't even let myself know. But I could tell you, if somebody is doing something that I don't find compatible with what I think they ought to be doing, this is very unflattering, but in any case, I'll say, oh, well, that's because of this or that or the other, or they need this tool or that tool or the other. And you'll probably say, yeah, maybe very often that's the case, but how are you feeling? And, yeah,
right.
It's always a trigger. It's always a trigger, which means back to me. Got to have another look. And my present situation has given me lots of opportunities, as you can imagine. So.
Well, one of the reasons why what you're saying is right on track is if you remember that, in the beginning of the conversation, we talked about perception.
Mm-hmm.
If perception is nothing but a construct of the mind, everything
mm-hmm.
the mind seems to be telling us about somebody else is autobiographical. It's telling us about us. It's all done with smoke and mirrors.
I know.
And the prescription Richard Bach, we teach best that which we most need to learn. The prescription I give is always the one I need to hear. That's why I'm still teaching this work 50 years later. I'm a slow learner. Cancel the thought.
I know. I'm joining your club. Well, I joined it quite a while ago, but yeah. that personal code evaluation seems to be still firing. I'll often say, oh, I answered it that way, but really, I probably should have answered it this way. But maybe that things are different right now, too. I mean,
you're
probably
shifting your mind.
Target.
Yeah, exactly. When you change perception, everything changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything shifts. And what we're looking to do, that last score, number 10 on validity or consistency, ultimately, if you look in the realm of psychology, when people do this personal code evaluation or they do the larger picture of the MMPI, basically psychologists say, this is it. It's finished. This is where people are going to live for the rest of their lives. The only when they readminister that score, Dr. Tim shared with us one day, the only reason they readminister that evaluation is to see what happens with score number 10, their validity score.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that they normally see changes. They don't see changes in honoring self, honoring others, truth, fear. They just don't see those changes.
Amazing.
When people take this work, I mean, we'll see people come to, let's say, a summer intensive at heart, and they'll get, there's a total, if somebody scored zero on everything, there's a total of 1,000-point gain they could make, and we've seen people get a 700 or 800-point shift. Believe me, those lives change big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
oh, and
but yeah, it's all autobiographical, which is kind of a bummer, isn't it?
yeah, it sure is. I know we're being cut off, but I have that loaned Avicen if somebody wants it. I've been using it every day, And but if somebody wants it, because I can always ask for mine back from Jenna, you know.
Please stick with it for now. Just keep it and stick with it. Keep putting your hand in it.
Thanks. Yep. It's good.
All right, young lady.
All right.